guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Say that more slowly because I'm stupid.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
I have a question. Who do you think lost more in the Super Bowl, Brady or Belichick?
Oh, that's not even close. Who, meaning who lost more reputation, more
yes. Legacy, on the legacy.
Legacy. Oh, there's no question it's Belichick.
Absolutely.
Not even close, Marlon. Yeah, Belichick took a real hit. Took a real hit. I mean, I don't think anyone's like taking him out of... If you thought he was the best coach of all time going into the game, you still have to feel that way. I'm not telling you to like dock him. But, oh, no. He made a couple of...
Yeah, the Butler benching.
Bad mistakes.
Just how the defense played overall.
And just how he carried himself. I mean, again, the rationale for the Butler thing, of which there was none, is just such a bad look for him. But he'll get over it, and his reputation will still survive. I mean, he's still going to be considered the greatest coach of all time, if that's what you thought of him before the game, which I did. So, I mean, he's still the greatest coach ever to me. Still the best coach in the league, bar none. Still no one I'd rather have. But he took a real hit, and rightfully so.
Oh, I think it feels to me like he's lost, and I say this perceived or otherwise, power. Like, you know, and look, he's going to have all the power he's always had when he comes back, you know. But I think that the perception of it is, ooh, it feels like Brady has gained some serious territory.
No. The Pats have gone all in on Brady. All in. And we sort of surmised here, heading up to this era in the last couple of years. Could there come a point where Kraft has to choose between the coach and the quarterback? You know, because you just see the tea leaves building, right? That Belichick drafted Garoppolo, clearly likes him. And that there's going to come a point when Garoppolo comes of age. And Belichick, knowing his history, is going to want to go with the younger, cheaper model that he drafted and developed. That's just what Belichick always does. And at that point, does Belichick have the balls to move on from Brady? And I always answered it by saying it won't be his call. Because it's going to be then Kraft, and Kraft's going to have to choose. And he did. Kraft did choose. They're all in on Brady, man. They get rid of Garoppolo. They make sure that, again, just look at it. They let Brady's understudy go. They dump him. But they make sure they bend over backward to keep Belichick's understudy. I mean, what does that tell you?
Oh, it tells you everything.
And how much of a factor did Brady have in keeping McDaniels? This I found interesting. And again, unfortunately, Ron Borges was talking to Nick in Boston and not a legit source because Ron had this in his column, his unfortunate column last Friday, which I wanted to be true, but I guess wasn't. But others wrote it. Others wrote it. Gasper said that day. Gasper said that he thinks that one of the reasons McDaniel stayed is because of Brady's comfort level. And then I missed this. This was on Wednesday. Greg Bedard wrote this on Wednesday, the day after he was in with us. Bedard wrote on BostonSportsJournal.com, "There is no denying that Brady's comfort level, when he's nearing the finish line, was a factor in all of this," meaning the McDaniel situation. "It was a factor in all of this. Probably more for the Krafts than Belichick." Do you get what he's writing there? So it was a factor for Brady, and it's a factor for the Brady as it relates to the Krafts, not Belichick.
Right, and the Krafts want Brady to be comfortable. Belichick doesn't care.
Thank you. Exactly right. Exactly what he means. Bedard wrote, "As I wrote last night, Belichick and Brady don't have the same communication level at this point." Huh. "Although that could change. McDaniels was a major conduit between Brady and Belichick, and the prospect of not having that was not optimal." Why does Bedard write that the day after he leaves? You know, the day after he's in here versus the day before? Because I would have pounded the crap out of that big fellow over this one.
See, it makes sense, though, if you think about it. Again, go back to the Tom versus time when Tom's in his car after the Carolina loss and he's talking. Who's he talking to?
Josh McDaniels.
Bingo.
But I mean, this is really couched. But what he's basically implying is that Belichick and Brady don't talk as much as they used to, if they talk at all, and that the player-coach interactions between Brady and McDaniels, and if they lost McDaniels, it's back to Brady and Belichick, and they're not really on great terms.
Was that a surprise after the Seth Wickersham piece? This is what I thought was missing in the first place when this was all reported that McDaniels was coming back. He had to. I figured Brady factored into this somehow, and Gasper referred to McDaniels as a buffer between the two. Of course that's what's playing in here.
Okay, unfortunately, and I got this wrong. This is Bedard who wrote it. I said last night that Volan may have wrote it. This is Bedard that wrote this, and he made a great point. And this is, again, with my first instinct when I heard the McDaniels story, I said, well, this is the Krafts creating leverage against Belichick or protecting themselves against Belichick just up and leaving. And Bedard sort of echoed that comment. He said, part of keeping McDaniels in place, at least for the Krafts, it gives them a ready option Should Belichick up and retire at any point? Bedard says, remember when Belichick left the Giants for the Browns and a few months later Bill Parcells retired for health reasons and the Giants spiraled out of control under Ray Hanley? The Crafts are not going to let that happen with the Patriots. Like Belichick does with his roster when it comes to dealing free agents and the draft, the Crafts are not going to be left without options should Belichick's employment status change suddenly. That's exactly what I thought. Like, you just can't be in a position where if Bill walks out the door,
you've got nothing.
No one, you know, Brian Flores is, or someone who's has nowhere close to being ready to do it is your head coach. You can't be in that position. You can't be put, you can't leave yourself in that position.
I am a little surprised, though, that McDaniels was willing to put himself in that spot, given, you know, some of the whispers that you hear during the season about maybe he doesn't want to be the guy to succeed Belichick. They must have paid him a good chunk.
And so this is my last point, that you, if you think this was Belichick's call, please. Does Belichick set what Josh McDaniels makes?
No.
Is that Bill's call?
No. And listen, the other thing is,
for them to make it worth Josh's while, they have to pay him and pay him handsomely. That is 100% Robert and his coaching budget and what he's willing to, because this isn't even a cap consideration, if you even believe that nonsense. Coaches are a whole separate line item. So this is 100% on the owner making it worth McDaniel's while. Bill doesn't have the autonomy to write Josh McDaniels a check for whatever he wants. That's not Bill's call. That's Robert's.
Well, and the other thing is, if you come back to the leverage standpoint, like that whole point with regard to the Crafts versus Belichick, why would Belichick argue for something that will give him less leverage?
Right? Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, he was willing to let McDaniels go. He was willing to. Now, he's not going to stand in McDaniels' way because he likes McDaniels. So, sure, he wants to see McDaniels succeed. But he's going to go out of his way to cut off his own legs by arguing to bring McDaniels back, and you got to extend?
So, again, we're just going over some Patriots stuff that we read over the weekend that caught our eye. To me, the number one thing was Volan's line in his column that says, we know that the Crafts were as surprised as anyone at the Butler benching. They were also surprised that Belichick only got a paltry second-round pick from the Niners for Jimmy Garoppolo. Which is, you know, Volan is saying the Crafts are second-guessing Belichick along with the rest of us.
Well, again, so one of them came from Peter King, right? Peter King wrote that Kraft was taken aback.
Oh, right, and you're saying there was another one?
Well, I was just looking, too. Bert Breer wrote something on February 7th about the Crafts after the game had the same question everyone else did, which is, what the hell happened to Malcolm Butler? So they didn't know what was going down either with Butler on the sideline. Apparently, if you read what Bert wrote, so maybe Ben's just giving us a summary of the whole thing. But that Butler thing, man, this
stinks to high heaven.
Oh, does it ever? And look, if you're the Crafts, how could you be happy with that? You know, again, ultimately it is their money. You bring back the guy in the first round tender, he's there, and then you bench him in the Super Bowl, and you put him out there to cover a punt. It just doesn't make any sense.
Okay, back to your phones on a reentry Monday. Everything being on the board. Jake and Worcester on Major League Baseball free agents. Go ahead, Jake.
How you doing, guys? I just don't see there being any way the Red Sox can catch up to the Yankees this year. And J.D. Martinez, sure as hell, is not going to do that for them. Why don't they just wait till next year? They can develop Devers, develop Benintendi, then go after someone like Bryce Harper, even though he wants about $400 million. I'll hang up and let you guys talk. Thanks.
That's what I think they should do. Don't throw good money after bad. Don't make a move just because now you feel you're chasing the Yankees. That's when you make a mistake. If you're going to spend money, spend it on someone legit like Giancarlo Stanton. And if it's not going to be him, then wait. Wait till someone legit comes and then throw the money at them. That's my feeling.
See, look, I like the Yankees in the division. I'm not convinced they can't catch the Yankees. Houston's probably out of their sight. Houston's loaded. That team's a wagon. But the Yankees don't have pitching. I mean, you know, listen, I like the Yankees too. Don't get me wrong. If you're asking me right now, I'm picking New York. But I could see them sucking on the mound. I mean, I wouldn't totally rule that out. So that's not out of the realm of possibility. And look, I would love to see Bryce Harper with the Red Sox. Talk about my freaking fantasy.
Well, just injecting them with life.
Exactly.
And buzz and star power.
Well, it's not
power.
Him, Machado. I mean, that free agent.
Harper would be better, though.
No, of course.
Harper in Boston. Oh, Harper.
But that free agent class is loaded.
Oh.
Harper lights the lamp, man.
Oh, my God, does he ever. Murray, I will have to sleep like wrapped in a diaper every night for fear of what's going to happen in bed at night.
Tim and Marblehead on the Bruins. Hi, Tim.
Hey, guys. Nice to talk about the Bruins again. But my question is, who deserves the most credit for this, you know, Bruins resurgence here? Is it Sweeney? Is it Cassidy? And how does, you know, Neely fit into the equation if you want to fit him in?
So, like, you know, Neely I have a hard time with because it's I don't think he makes any nuts and bolts personnel decisions. You know, he leaves that up to Don Sweeney. So I think Cam has gotten too much credit for some things and too much blame for others. You know, so I guess Sweeney. I mean, Cassidy's Sweeney's guy.
I go 50-50 there because I think they're a tandem. I think they sort of see it the same way.
But Sweeney identified Cassidy.
That's
see what
true.
I'm saying?
Yeah,
Sweeney,
that's true.
And Sweeney worked with him at the Providence level, and he's the one that earmarked Cassidy. So I think Sweeney, I go Sweeney because Sweeney found Cassidy.
I mean, he did, you know, look, ultimately the line draws, you know, is drawn there, right? He's, you know, he oversees the draft. He oversees the coaching staff. He oversees all of it. But I do feel like he and Cassidy philosophically are in alignment.
Open line at 617-779-0985. Joe in Dorchester on the Sox. Hi, Joe.
How you doing, guys? I got two quick things. I agree with the J.D. Martinez. Don't sign him. I'd rather pay overpay somebody like Logan Morrison for 1 year, 2 years, have his money come off the books, and maybe go after Bryce Harper. How much do you think we should pay somebody like Logan Morrison?
Tell me about Logan Morrison.
He's a softball player. He's a hack.
Isn't that what they need? 1 year?
Yeah, but they need someone who hits for better average than that. I mean, I just, you know, to me, Morrison's like a number six hitter. That's how I sort of define these
guys.
You
already have him in Mitch Moreland.
Well, he's got more power than Moreland, I think.
For 1 year. Last year, he hit 38. What was his career high?
What was his career high before that?
23, and that happened one time. Everything else is the teens or less.
So you're right. They're comparable, Jimmy. You're right. They're comparable players. Like, I'm not a huge Logan Morrison guy. I'm not. I would rather wait. You're replicating something there.
It's Felger and Maz on a reentry Monday. Right back to your calls right after this.
Felger and Maz, the Sports Hub. This is Felger and Maz.
I'm a sports dork now.
That guy is a hack.
Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
So you're younger, you're more athletic, you play better defensively, and you're devoid of the drama.
Mm-hmm.
The combination of those four things make them considerably better than they were a week ago. They definitely have what it takes to get out of the East. They're the favorites immediately to come out of the East. What you saw last night, yesterday, for example, Kyrie Irving is a superstar point guard, but he's still about 6'1", 6'2". So you're going up against lengthier guys, the George Hills, the Rodney Hoods of the world. LeBron James is able to switch off and come out and defend you on the perimeter as well. Because they have length and athleticism and the ability to defend, if you're the Bulls, devoid of Gordon Hayward, who went down in game one of this season in Cleveland, you're really fighting an uphill battle. And so now things have, it's almost like it's returned to order. Cleveland is back in the driver's seat in terms of being the favorites in the East.
Let's see them face some adversity and let's see how LeBron responds. Let's see what happens when, again, it goes sideways just a little bit and LeBron starts looking at these new teammates cross-eyed. Like, what are you doing that for?
Or someone lets him down.
And then, and then the whispering starts, and then, you know, like, because that team feels like an open book. Feels like anytime anyone screws up, it's like open warfare. Everyone's...
One unnamed prominent player. Like,
exactly.
How many times do you read that?
Let's just wait and see. Let this play out a little bit. I'm not buying on the Cavs yet.
Yeah, but see, that's the part of the difference with this roster, is you don't have veteran guys who are going to want to challenge LeBron, publicly or otherwise. I think that works to their benefit. There was at one point yesterday where J.R. Smith made a bad pass to LeBron. Did you see LeBron look at him and just kind of shake his head and turn around like, you suck?
Yeah.
LeBron was under the basket where Garnett was sitting right behind him, and I thought, ooh, I'd love to hear that conversation. Because I bet you, I'd be willing to bet Garnett was razzing him. Those two hate each other,
I
think.
So you can't take too much out of one game. But as I said earlier, like, that's the first time this year that Cavaliers team looked like they gave a crap and they were having fun. That's a little bit of a concern.
One game. Sugar high, the first game together, like, come on.
I'm telling you
that. But an engaged LeBron is terrifying.
I think LeBron and Rodney Hood are going to work well together. Those two look like, to me, like that's going to work.
Okay, I'm going
to
try this for the fourth time now.
Celtics.
Celts-Cavs, seven-game series starts tonight. Who do you like there, Murray?
Celtics. They have the home court advantage, Celtics.
So that's now two Celtics and two Cavaliers.
I've not said two Cavaliers. I've not.
We have.
I'm joking, Murray.
If you're not also concerned about the way the Celtics have played over the last couple of weeks, and it's not just that they miss Marcus Smart, the offense has been wretched. They've been called up by the coach the last couple of games, and rightfully so. Like, there's an issue there, and I'd like to think it's just young players hitting the wall.
I'm taking the Cavs right now.
I still got the Celts.
Look, LeBron's the best player on either team, obviously. And then beyond that, the Celtics right now aren't that good.
No, they haven't been playing well. And the Cavs yesterday were lights out. If you know, get back to me in a month. If the Cavs play like this for a consistent period of time, then I'll rethink it. But, you know, again, Jordan Clarkson, 7 of 11. Hood, 6 of 11. And again, Usman, that white kid.
J.R. Smith Day is the one.
Turkish. The Turkish kid who missed the dunk was still 4 of 8. So it's really like 5 of 7, 5 of 8 if you
Like, yeah, Hood can shoot, though.
I think he's going to make it.
And the Turk is shooting 40%.
It's J.R.
Sorry,
Smith.
That's what I'm calling him.
J.R. Smith's day is the one. It's like, okay, this is going to be one of these type of games because he's a hack.
But he can shoot, too.
6 of 7. 3 of 4 from beyond
okay,
the line.
But listen, he's a shooter. That's what he does.
This
he's
is what
a
I'm
shooter.
Saying. They made their shots yesterday. They made their shots. Let's see when they shoot a more reasonable level. They were 54% from the floor.
I'm telling you. Yeah, and they were 50% from three-point land,
53% from the three. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, they were over 50 in both places. And the I'm telling you, though, Hood and LeBron is going to work. That's going to work. That guy's going to spot up and shoot because he's pretty good.
Okay, Andrew in Boston on the seas. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hey, I feel the exact same way as you. I'm not going to overreact to the Cavs shooting lights out and, you know, like J.R. Smith in this knockdown. But one thing that I am most worried about is the Cavs look like they're having fun playing defense like yesterday, and the Celtics just look like they're crawling towards the All-Star break, and I really think they need that right now. What do you think?
Okay, so do the Cavs get a lift from that trade so late, and they've got a sort of a new group and a fresher run-up to the playoffs in the South? I mean, is that what he's talking about? Like, maybe. Maybe there's something there where it's gone a little stale with the Celtics, or the rookies have hit the wall, and they don't have that infusion at the end of the year like Cleveland just does? I mean, maybe. But you're going to be home in that series, so just start there. You're home in that series. And I think, and again, for all you anti-Marcus Smart people, I think you're seeing it now, that the team feels different without Marcus Smart.
They miss an edge.
I told you when he got hurt, like or you're considering trading him, that you lose some of your DNA without Marcus Smart. Like, do they go down 26 points every game, well, the last four games of Marcus Smart's in there?
I doubt it. Because, again, he brings attitude. He brings edge. He brings intensity. I told you, I think some of the guys on that team are probably a little afraid of him because he's a little bit of a nut in a good way, in a competitive way. And he's, you know, look, he'll punch a poster on a wall for crying out loud when he's mad. So there's a, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing to have on a team. What I'm more worried about is Brown and Tatum. I'm worried about those two guys. You know, the season's only getting longer. It's not going the other way. And Brown sucked yesterday. He was awful in that game. I mean, he was completely invisible for the most part. Forget the missed shots. He wasn't doing anything. And then, you know, didn't score until the fourth quarter. Feels like he's fallen in love with his jumper. And, hey, it's all well and good that you can make some threes, but don't think that that's your game because it's not.
We've got Bob in Southboro on a reentry Monday. Bob on the Patriots. Go ahead.
Yeah, but first, Felger, do you have a crystal ball? How the hell do you know the home court advantage throughout? That's a little...
No, they're like five games up on Cleveland. They'll have home court over Cleveland, I'm saying.
Well, anyways, the Patriots' point was, you know, you keep saying this last... Did Philadelphia, they hired a rookie coach. I don't know if McDaniels is going to be a good coach or bad coach. He might be the best coach ever. Who knows? But we don't. The Bruins point you made. Remember, everyone said Claude. We can't replace him.
I didn't say that.
The beat guys loved him, and you said, "Well, what are we going to do without Claude?" Da 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 da. Well, we found out what we're going to do without Claude. We're much better without him. So maybe, who knows? So you don't need a line of extension. Maybe you hire the right person. Doug Peterson looks like the right person for Philly. I have no idea. But I certainly wouldn't be banking on Josh McDaniels.
Okay, don't you feel better if it's Josh McDaniels versus, you know, again, Chad O'Shea? Like, well, you wouldn't feel better about that?
Did anyone feel great about Doug Peterson when he got hired? I didn't.
No, but bad comparison. It's, you know, did Doug Peterson take over from a legend? I mean, I guess he... Andy Reid, I mean, I don't know. All I'm saying is we can agree to disagree then. If I'm Robert Kraft and I'm sitting there and there's a chance that Belichick leaves here sooner or later, he could leave next week for all we know. The way things have gone, like, would anyone be surprised?
No.
Like, I mean, I'm not, I don't expect it to happen. I think he's here. But if he just up and leaves, would you be totally stunned at this stage?
No.
So the Krafts have to sort of just cover themselves. And in that case, don't you feel better with McDaniels here versus not McDaniels here?
Yes, but the reason is Brady. In other words, I don't want Brady having to deal with a coach he has no relationship with and anything else. If Brady's not here, I don't know what McDaniels is. I have no idea. Now, I don't feel as great about McDaniels as you do. So, like, you know, look, I'm not telling you McDaniels is a bum. Maybe he learned. Maybe he's going to be a good coach. I have no idea. I'm just telling you I'm not confident in it. If it's Brady, though, like, if they're going to invest in Brady, which they have, Brady over Bill, they've made their choice, then keep Brady happy.
Might as well give him his coach.
Exactly.
Give him his coach, give him his money, and just you push. You went Brady, which is a tough call, tight call, but you went Brady. So now go all in on Brady, and that's it.
So keep him happy with McDaniels. And then 2 years from now, 3 years from now, when Brady's done, if that's how long it is, then worry about the next coach then. Peterson followed Chip Kelly, by the way.
Chip not Kelly, Ian, right. So that was an easy. Reed. Right.
Yeah, he followed Chip Kelly. So, you know, that one worked. But, like, to me, McDaniels is about Brady. Keep Brady happy now because Brady alone will get you to 11-5.
So this line in the Bedard column last Wednesday, where how come no one told me about this? I got to remember to go on there and check all this stuff out because this is a juicy little tidbit he got here. Hopefully, again, it's not from Dan and Quincy and from legit sourcing here, but Bedard says Belichick and Brady don't have the same communication level at this point, which is a real kind way of saying they don't talk like they used to, I guess. I added that last piece on, but Belichick and Brady don't have the same communication level at this point, although that could change, period, next sentence. McDaniels was a major conduit between Brady and Belichick, and the prospect of not having that was not optimal. That's a really interesting nugget to me. Is part of the reason McDaniels here is because Brady and Belichick don't really talk anymore?
I'm not totally shocked by that. Again, like, you know, and when you read it that way.
No.
And I don't mean it. I didn't mean it in that tone. I mean, when you read that, you know, there is a little bit of a thing there that, again, that Tom versus Time scene where he's driving home after the Carolina game and he's saying, you know, we just show up like we're the Patriots who throw our helmets on the field. The guy he's talking to is McDaniels. Like, that is a really honest, open comment. Like, and one you'd expect that he would have with Bill, but it was Josh. Like, I don't know. Maybe I think Bedard's onto something.
Steven Webster on the Bruins here on a reentry Monday. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how's it going? Do you fear that Sweeney might turn into Shirelli 2.0 with all the success the Bruins are having and just start signing all these guys that aren't really proven to, like, long-term contracts?
So Maz is shaking his head already.
Why? I don't, because I'll tell you what. I think that Sweeney, it feels to me philosophically, he recognizes you got to keep pumping him out. You just keep pumping players out. You sign a couple, you let others go, and you keep drafting and developing. That's how you do it now.
How do you know?
I just think that that's sort of the vibe I get. I don't know that.
I mean, what if this team goes on a really big run, and, you know, now it's, I mean, these rookie contracts are 2-3 years, depending on when they come up. DeBrusque, Heinen, Carlo, McAvoy. I mean, I just named four guys.
Okay, can you keep them all? I mean, even if you wanted to, could you?
Yes.
I say no.
I mean, Shirelli did, and then you had nothing left.
Okay, but I don't think you can keep them all, because I just think that it's going to cost too much money. You can't do it. So you got to identify the ones you can keep, and you got to keep that pipeline, that assembly line moving. I just think from a conceptual standpoint, in other words, of how you do it, I think Sweeney gets it in a salary cap age. You got to keep drafting. You got to keep developing. What I don't know is, can he identify the right guys now? Like, that's the next step. They've drafted well, for the most part. I mean, he's got young talent in the system. Now, can he identify the right ones and say, we're going to keep DeBrusque, but we're going to let Bjork go? Or, like,
right.
You know, we're going to keep Heinen, but we're going to let that guy go. I don't know. McAvoy's an easy one. We all see that. But the other ones, I don't know. To me, that's the next test.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Felger and Mez.
They're more scared of you than you are of them.
98.5. The Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Sports Hub. Cavs just have to get it across half court, and they do. In the hands of John Holland. Cleveland Cavaliers shake it up, blow it up, start over, and they come to Boston, and they blow out the candles on Paul Pierce Day and blow out the Celtics. The final score, Cleveland 121. Boston 99.
I'm sorry. I'm not buying after one game. Kevin in New Hampshire, what do you got for us?
Yeah, real quick. That's cute putting Bird and Pierce in the same sentence. Didn't Larry Bird score most of his points one game against Portland left-handed? Yeah, that's nice. Hey, Jimmy Stewart, question for you. I see Marcus Smart at the end of the year, you know, being a bye-bye, if you will. He'll be gone. I just see Rozier, more upside, younger. He attacks the basket more on offense and defense, and his upside, I think, is just way more than Smart is. I'll listen and hang up.
Okay, he asked Jimmy, so I don't know. You want him to answer the man?
I think if you're putting odds on who's here next season for the Celtics, it's Rozier over Smart, but I think it's more for trade possibilities. I could see them bringing back both for next season.
Who do you like better?
I like Terry Rozier better. I have for a while.
Okay, I go Smart there, and I think you're seeing why now. You're seeing why now in this little stretch. They're missing a little something. And that's the little hair a little hair on the, you know what I mean? It's like they just lack a little sack. And I think that's Marcus Smart. That you're missing Marcus Smart.
Little hair on the onion?
Yeah, you know what I mean? And that's that you lose a little bit of your DNA when you don't have Marcus Smart out there. And I think you're seeing it in this little stretch right here. And that's that. And, you know, I just think that that's what that's shown you the last couple games.
I didn't think yesterday was one of Rozier's better games. He got 21, but a lot of them are in
garbage. He was still competing when they were down 20 points, which I like.
A lot of his points were in garbage time yesterday, but I like him better now.
Ryan in Nashua on the Bruins. Hi, Ryan.
Hey guys. Thanks for taking my call. One thing I just wanted to find out. Did you guys catch that Ross Johnson fight, Calgary and the Islanders? That was brutal. That was a nice little fight. But secondly, I just want to just say, I remember last year you guys were saying, made mention, like, if there was a good offer on the table for a team that's on the cusp that needed, like, a Chara or a Krejci, as well as the Bruins have kind of been playing, do we still make that move? Do you still trust we need to even make that move?
Great question, possibly? Ryan. Great question. Chara's 40. His contract's up. He's been great this year. Love him. Mean it. Someone comes to you for two first-round picks for Zdeno. I mean, they're not going to do it. This is stupid to talk about because now they're a contender. They're not in this spot, but just play along. Is that still something you consider?
I mean, I would, but they won't.
Not a chance.
No, they won't. They've had too good a year, and they're going to need him, and they're talking about signing him long, you know, I say beyond this year. I shouldn't say long term. So they wouldn't do it. But, yeah.
No,
for a 40-year-old guy, you wouldn't take two first-round picks?
This Bruins thing is flipped. Yes, yes, I would, but it's silly to even talk about. The Bruins thing is totally flipped. Where, you know, I just thought they would be in this position this year where they would be bubble-ish, you know, on the bubble, and you'd have some really attractive rentals, like Charo would be a real attractive rental right now. Contract's up. He's still got enough in the tank. Boy, if you're a real Stanley Cup contender and you put him on your second pair and you limit his minutes down the stretch here and you know, go into the Cup playoffs with Charo on your second pairing, like, oof, what a great rental that would be for a legit Stanley Cup team. And I thought the Bruins would be in a spot to sort of field offers for that guy. Well, now that's you. Now that's you. And now do you have to flip your sort of expectations or your approach at the deadline and say, well, ooh, now we're not peeling off old guys to continue to build for the future. Do we have to, because we got here a year early, take some of our younger pieces, our draft pieces, and try and get someone more Stanley Cup ready to make a run this year? And I think they have to do that second thing.
Oh, I do too. Yeah, but I think you pick a happy medium somewhere in there. You don't go all out. I mean, you can't give up too much young talent for a guy you'll have for, you know. They're not going to do a rental anyway. They're going to get someone who's got at least another year beyond it. But they shouldn't, like, you know, mortgage anything to do it.
We talked earlier about the Celtics crowd. We got a call from someone who was at the Pierce ceremony yesterday and said the crowd was just amazing. It was awesome atmosphere and it was so great. You know, even after they get blown up by the Cavs, no one left. Every seat was filled, and the emotions and the electricity in the building were just amazing. And I said something to the effect of, "That's the Celtics are the perfect team for that to happen. If the Bruins had laid an egg on a jersey retirement night, fans would still litter the ice with crap and storm out of the building. Like, it wouldn't be a happy existence, but Celtics fans are just generally happy and positive and can handle losses. And I think Adam in Auburn wants to follow up on that. Adam, go ahead.
Yeah, so just sometimes your hypocrisy is so outrageous. I got to pick up the phone. You know, so you guys are so harsh on Celtics fans, right, for liking their young team and thinking that they're headed in the right direction, and they call them the Bridgies, and you make up the freight train song for LeBron, and it's all big fun time. So I was like, wow, Bruins fans are real tough. So you start off this year by telling everybody that you just want a hockey.
Okay, I'm not hanging up. His phone's fading up.
Nah, you with me?
Yes, go ahead, Adam.
All right, so you set the bar so low that you just wanted the Bruins to have a hockey season. A team with Chara and Bergeron and Pasternak and Marchand. You just asked for a hockey season, right? So now you got a hockey season. Now the Bruins are fighting for the President's Cup. They're one of the top teams in the conference. And you're talking about, you're fielding calls about trading Chara. You're talking about you just want them to be the 3 seed and play the Maple Leafs in the first round. If a Celtics fan pulled this crap, you would laugh them off the air. So I want you to hold Bruins accountable. You should be saying they are what they are. They should be in the conference finals. Jimmy should be Murray should be making up the freight train song for Ovechkin, coming for your Bridgie Bees. And, you know, how about a little accountability on your end for the big, tough Bruins fans?
Okay, so I don't totally get his point other than just he's...
Well, I think of it in this term. Are the Bruins the Bridgies?
I think they're still in the bridge period, yes, I do. I don't have high expectations for him. But I don't understand why that...
All aboard the bees train.
I just don't get how he's tying it all together. You know, and that wasn't much of a rip. I'm just saying the Celtics crowd will hang in there after a loss and is sort of, you know, wee, it's okay. You all had happy childhoods. There's been a lot of winning, and you're okay with that. I guess I just totally get how he's tying it all together.
See, now that I think of it, actually, the difference is that the Bruins fans recognize that their team is in a bridge period.
Right, exactly.
Celtics fans think that they're actually on the verge of winning a title.
And the reason it kind of doesn't work is there's such unpredictability with the NHL playoffs that even if they are kind of a bridge team, if they're playing this well, they could go on a deep run.
Whereas you knew the Celtics were going to get stomped by the time they got to Cleveland.
See, right. Being in a bridge period in the NBA is death.
Right.
You're nowhere. In the NHL, if you get hot at the right time and your goaltender plays well, that could mean you go to the Cup Finals.
I mean, I had my doubts about whether the Bruins would be able to pull this off. Like, you know, so last year they got in. And I thought, well, you know, yeah, but are they, you know, where's the improvement coming? And now this year they have one of the best records in the league. Yeah, that's a hard trick to pull the way they pulled it.
But again, if they lose in the first round, that's a gag.
It is, yeah.
That's a gag, and they should be ripped for that. Absolutely. If they're one and done, that's not good.
And they easily could lose in the first round.
Oh, absolutely they could.
They totally could lose in the first round.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.